Welcome to Beyond the Loss with your host, Aditi Leverage. Aditi is a certified coach and certified grief recovery specialist, mindfulness meditation teacher, writer, and founder of the Pregnancy and Infant Loss Support Center. Aditi's mission is to help people connect to a variety of healing options so they can heal in their own way on their own terms. And now here is your host, Aditi Leverage.
Thanks everyone for tuning into Beyond the Loss. Today we have Jessica Zucker with us. Jessica Zucker is a Los Angeles-based psychologist specializing in women's health and the author of the forthcoming book, I Had a Miscarriage, A Memoir, A Movement. She's also the creator of the I Had a Miscarriage campaign and has published countless articles on the topic. I'm super excited to have Jessica with us today. So thank you, Jessica, for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, I've been, as you know, I've been following your Instagram for a number of years, and I'm just super excited to have you on and to share your voice and your story with our community and our listeners. So thank you.
Thank you.
So first, if you wouldn't mind sharing with our audience, who may not know you, just a little bit about your own personal connection to pregnancy and infant loss and kind of what led you to do this work.
Well, I'm a psychologist, as you noted, and I specialize in reproductive and maternal mental health and have done so for over a decade at this point. So actually, I was drawn to this work before having had a personal connection to it. So that means that a majority of my patients would come to me wanting to get pregnant, struggling with perinatal and postpartum mood and anxiety disorders, as well as miscarriage, stillbirth, infant loss, and the list goes on. So at that time, it was really theoretical. I was drawn to the field because I do also have a background in public health and worked in women's reproductive health at that point in my life. And so when I pursued my PhD, I wanted to somehow marry all of my interests in my clinical work. And so again, it was not sort of a corporeal kind of experience for me. And in my second pregnancy, so my first pregnancy was smooth and uneventful. And 16 weeks into my second pregnancy, I miscarried while I was home by myself. And I started spotting 2 days prior, I went directly to my doctor. Everything looked perfect in utero. The heartbeat was as it should be. The placenta was where it should be. So we really didn't know what to make of what was happening, especially because, as you know, a majority of miscarriages take place within the first trimester. So, you know, we didn't know what was happening, and I was just instructed to go about my life the best I could until we knew more. So on that Thursday, I started spotting more and just knew that this was probably the beginning of the end. And by late afternoon, the blood was brighter, and I began to, you know, have the worsening of my cramps. I mean, I was in active labor, but of course I didn't know that at the time. And so I felt like I was going to have maybe like a panic attack or something. Just anxiety sort of overtook my physical body because I started sweating and I just felt like really sort of not like myself. And I went to the bathroom and thought if I just sort of took a breath and maybe put a cold compress on my face, I would feel like myself again. But I sat down and I started to urinate and the baby came out. So suffice it to say, this traumatic experience, you know, changed my personal and professional life for good. And that's the short version of the long story. From there I had to, you know, then bring the baby in a bag to my doctor's office and then had to proceeded to have an unmedicated DNC because of the amount of blood loss. So it's just like the trauma just kept on going.
Yeah.
And so I took a week off from work, which of course in retrospect was a ridiculously short amount of time. But when you're the one living through it, somehow you think like you just can do it. And I also didn't really know what else I would do with my day. I mean, sitting around all day at home didn't sound appealing either. So I returned to work and my work has been different ever since.
Wow. What a story.
Yeah. I mean, I had been sitting across from people for years and years hearing about these things, but until I went through it firsthand, there was really no way I could relate in such a real way until I could.
Mm-hmm. How did you as a professional, because I didn't know that actually about you, that you've been doing this work for years prior to actually experiencing a loss yourself. And so how did you kind of reconcile, like, as the professional person and now having actually experienced that?
I don't know. I mean, I really stumbled through those first, you know, days and weeks and months even of trying to wrestle with, you know, how much of my life can I keep to myself? Because obviously therapy is not about the therapist. It's about the person coming to the office. And yet a lot of my patients, of course, because I was 4 months along, knew I was pregnant. They all knew I was pregnant. So how much do I say about how it unfolded? How much do I not say? How much do I share my psychological process with them? How much do I not? So it was very tricky, particularly because there really are no books available on the topic. So as a therapist, there are loads of, you know, diagnoses and disorders, of course, that we are well versed about, but pregnancy loss is not one of them, not for the therapist. So it's sort of like I was having to make my way on my own, which made the experience that much more isolating and confounding, I think. So it's part of what I explore in my forthcoming book, you know, this kind of idea that without a roadmap, both professionally and personally, it really did a number on me and the life that I was leading.
Mm-hmm. And then you used that to create this amazing campaign, I Had a Miscarriage, and your book. I'm super, super excited about your book. I've pre-ordered it, as you know.
Thank you.
Can you share with our listeners when the book is actually set to come out?
Yes, it's coming out March 9th, I believe. I mean, I think it should be in Canada at the exact same time.
Yeah, I believe so.
Oh, good. Okay. So yeah, it's through Feminist Press and, you know, it's been a long time coming. So it's this kind of, I sort of feel the same way about my book as I did about my subsequent pregnancy after my loss, which is sort of like, I'll believe it when I see it, because it's so wanted and so tender and so vulnerable and so meaningful to me. And, It should be. I know it's happening because I actually have galleys in my house, so it's like I've been able to hold the thing. So I know it's coming to fruition, but it's still quite surreal.
Yes, I can totally imagine. And as a professional, another professional who's also experienced loss, I'm super excited to read that and just see how you've kind of navigated that reconciliation and holding space for others while also kind of holding space for your own healing. I think that's going to be super powerful for other professionals, and just even I think so, because that I really quite admire that you have taken this plunge in vulnerability to share that piece of your story.
Thank you so much.
And so so one of the things that I really admire about you, Jessica, is your ability to write and particularly write and speak about different aspects of loss, like the different impacts of loss that people are not really talking about. And that, as an organization, as our charity here, that's what we are trying to do as well, is to bring light to these, all of the different impacts and ways that we're impacted by loss. And one of the topics that I feel, or a couple of topics that I feel that people don't talk about, and I saw an article that you wrote, was how much our bodies change when we're pregnant. And then when we do have a loss, how do we kind of move through that experience of that body image? Because we see all of the posts on social media about, you know, being gentle on your postpartum body, but that's usually in relation to when you have a healthy living child. And it's always like, be grateful that your body made this miracle.
Exactly.
And so when I saw that article that you wrote, I was like, yes, it expressed everything that for so long I had been feeling. And so can you tell us a little bit more about what inspired you to write that article and more about that?
Yeah, thank you so much for being interested in talking about this part of loss, because I don't understand why the loss community hasn't taken this on more fully.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I get that with an earlier loss, you know, maybe like a chemical pregnancy or a 6-week loss, maybe physically the body hasn't expressed being pregnant. You know, maybe nobody else knows, or maybe you're not changing clothes, or maybe you're not even having symptoms yet. So, you know, that part I understand. But for those of us who have had second trimester losses, stillbirths, infant losses, where our bodies really went through this incredible transformation that others can see as well, and then we're sort of left to make meaning of living in our skin, living in what was, you know, creating something we wanted, and now an empty vessel. It's so confusing to know how to sort of look at yourself in the mirror and be compassionate, or to find grace. And yeah, I think in that article we talked about the body positivity movement making real strides and great dent in conversations around women's bodies and postpartum bodies. And yet, unfortunately, the conversations aren't really including being postpartum without a baby to show for it. And so we need that, right? Because I mean, what do you do if you're feeling, you know, my milk came in after my loss. And so what are you not only to do about that, not even from a medical perspective, how do you, you know, stop the milk from producing, but more so like, how do you relate to, how do you talk to yourself, your body about these things, and how do you find sort of peace? Because as you know, majority of women, the research has found that, you know, a majority of people are blaming themselves for these losses. So, you know, there's all this self-blame, there's guilt, there's shame. And of course, many women come to pregnancy already having a complicated relationship with their body image, or even, you know, having a history of eating disorders, whatever it may be. And so this conversation just needs to be had. I don't have necessarily any answers for them, you know, about it. It's like, because I don't think that the answer is just love your body. It made a baby, even if the baby isn't here. I mean, that's just not going to work. We just need to look at the complexity. It's like, wow, my body was creating something, and therefore, you know, there were these physical changes. And then the baby died, or the baby is no longer. And so how do I imagine myself, or embody my physical self? You know, it's very complicated.
It is complicated. And one thing that, like, as you noted, that when, like, your milk came in, and I see this a lot with my clients as well, like, a lot of people's milk does come in, and it's like, it's such a tangible contrast, right? Because, like, you feel like your body has failed in that it didn't, that this baby didn't become full term and born, and yet your body knows what to do in terms of, like, milk is coming in, right? So it's like such a contrast.
In retrospect, I wish that my body knew sooner so that I didn't have such a late loss and that it wasn't so dramatic and traumatic. But yeah, I think it's sort of like, it's complicated because I think that the, like, universal, like, in the zeitgeist, the narrative is women are born to have babies, or, you know, whatever the sort of messaging is around, like, oh, we can all just do this. And that there's the messaging around body image and how we should look and how we shouldn't. And so, yeah, when those things get together and commingle, it's very overwhelming for people to navigate.
It is. And it just goes back to, like, highlighting how, like, again, like you said, the complexities, right? And these are the complexities, I think, that the general society isn't having these conversations or hearing these conversations about the complexity of, like, there's just so much. It's, and each individual, that's the other thing, right? Like, you didn't feel like your body failed because there was a chromosomal, but there was still that doubt of, like, well, I wish my body would have signaled me more. But then there could be somebody else who's like, feels, well, no, I definitely feel like my body failed me, right? But they can have this similar experience, and yet the range of emotion around it is so different and unique to each person, which is really interesting. And I think more people should talk about that piece.
Well, I think that the reason people don't really gets us into the idea of the way society navigates grief, particularly around pregnancy and infant loss. I think because other people haven't had a chance to meet this longed for person, or, you know, this person never made it to the family, I think that the majority of people would rather we not talk about it at all.
Oh, yes. Yeah, people are very uncomfortable with it.
Yeah, and just really want this sort of happy ending idea. And so the moment somebody becomes pregnant again, if they do, the focus then just becomes that, you know, that, oh, okay, well, great. You know, at least you're going to get what you wanted, which really stymies the conversation around the grief that may still live on, which it typically does.
Yeah. That's what I've known for sure, is that it's not this event that happens in silo. It's something that, like, we carry with us, into our parenting journeys for sure. It reminds me of that quote. There's a quote that I love, and it says, we're taught how to acquire things, but not what to do once we lose them.
So true.
And I think that's, like, that really pinpoints that particularly pregnancy and infant loss, right? We always hear, as soon as we kind of have a partner, when are you having kids?
We need to get rid of that question altogether. There's a lot of comments that people would do well to no longer speak aloud when it comes to pregnancy or loss. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And you and I could probably chat about that for
yeah, there for should a be a hours. Book just about that. Yes.
Yes, there should be. Maybe that can be your next book.
We can
co-author it.
Yeah. That sounds great. That's good.
But speaking of body image, because there's this because I want to go there. I want to go into these more taboo kind of topics with you, because that, again, that's what I think you do so beautifully. And body image after a loss is so impactful, body image as a whole. But there's this other piece and another layer to that, and it's sex after loss, intimacy with your partner after loss. Do you have anything to say about that?
Yeah, I have a lot to say about sex with your partner after loss. I also have a lot to say about sex with yourself even after loss.
So
it really, to me, what it boils down to, it's like the notions of like, can grief and pleasure coexist? And I think, again, we don't talk about these ideas. We, in order to get pregnant again, or even if you're not going to get pregnant again, if you want to experience physical pleasure, whether it's by yourself or with a partner, you have to return to the very place where death occurred or where loss occurred. That is so complex and meaningful. I don't know how we are talking
so
about
profound.
It. Right. So it's like, so even if you just go to, let's say, masturbate because, you know, it's the way that you release your day or that you want to feel something, you know, positive that day or whatever it is, let's say it's a few weeks after the loss, there's no way to not be reminded, oh, I'm supposed to be pregnant right now. Maybe I wasn't having sex during pregnancy for fear. Let's just say some people feel that way. You know, or I feel guilty having an orgasm after, you know, a loss because aren't I supposed to be grieving? So it's like, there's all of these, and then, you know, bring a partner into it. And that's a whole other thing. So it's like, are we allowed to experience both things at once? Can we hold grief and pleasure at the very same time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the conversation that even in our previous episode, we talked about that, about like Stephanie, our first guest, she got married to her wife the same week that they experienced their loss. And so there was like this profound grief that was there, but then this profound joy. And it's like, how do we hold space? And we can hold space for both the grief and, like you said, and the pleasure at the same time. But I think people aren't, yeah, it's so confusing. And the more that we like don't talk about that, I think the more confusing it actually gets.
Right. And if we don't take on the fact that, again, in order to potentially get pregnant again, you have to return to the very place of your loss.
I like want to, I'm going to write that one down. That gave me, like, I got like goosebumps all over my body when you said that. I was like, that is so profound. And I'm probably going
to refer back to that. Here you are like having sex again to maybe try to conceive, but you were just pregnant. So why do I have to do this again? So there can be anger. There can be resentment, whether it's toward your own body, toward your partner, like who knows? There could be sadness. So maybe you're even engaging in sex while you're sad, because that's the thing. What if your grief goes on for a month, 6 months, a year, 10 years? Of course, you're probably going to resume your sexual life. So you're bound to potentially have some very unexpected feelings during sex, because maybe before your loss, sex was simply X, you know, maybe it was only pleasure, only passion, or only connection, or only whatever. And now it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, and again, how do you feel about trying to conceive again when you should be pregnant right now? I mean, there must be loads of fear there. There was for me, not the sex part necessarily, but once I found out I was pregnant, I was terrified for that entire pregnancy.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah. You know, so it also so depends on how you feel in your skin or how what your sexual life was, of course, prior to your loss. Because is sex just like a means to an end, or is it this, you know, connecting with yourself and your partner? And if it has that intimacy, the physical and emotional intimacy, I think it's really bound to bring up a lot of feelings about the loss and the grief for some, not everybody, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Again, right. I mean, every journey and every story of loss is so unique, and the emotions that come with it are so unique. But I think you're hitting the nail on the head that for a lot of people, it can be very complex, especially those first couple of times. And then I really like that you talked about the self-pleasure, which I didn't even really think about, but it, I think that really ties back again with the body image as well.
For sure. I did a piece for Harper's Bazaar. I think we interviewed like maybe 10 or 14 or something amount of women to talk about this. And it was really meaningful and profound to hear their personal stories, because for some people who used to use masturbation as just like a way to start the day or a way to end the day or a way to, you know, feel connected to themselves, after their loss, this was really changed. And sometimes it brought people to tears. Some people, it, you know, made them feel angry or regretful or badly about themselves. Because again, how am I entitled to feel pleasure if I am in pain? So it's an important topic for so many reasons. I mean, I think people think like, oh, giggle, giggle, you know, we don't talk about sex, but when sex is the primary way that we get pregnant, we can't not talk about it.
Yeah, we can't. It's just, yeah, it's impossible to separate the two.
Right.
Yes, I totally agree with that. Is there, so these articles, because I would love for our audience, if they want to read more about this, those articles, can they find them still online somewhere?
Yes, I think they should be cataloged on my website as well. But yeah, the body image piece, I think the one that you're talking about is on The Guardian. We published that with The Guardian. And then I did write a piece about sex after loss for New York Magazine several years ago now. And then the one about masturbation is up on Harper's Bazaar.
Okay. So I would encourage all of our listeners to go have a read, because I think this is a topic that so many of us that have experienced loss in our bodies, I think this is something we think about and we move through, but we don't have a space to really talk about it openly or have other people that have experienced it talk about it. So I would encourage anybody who's listening to go have a read of those articles. Jessica's a brilliant writer. And like I said, brings light to these really uncomfortable and taboo topics, but so, so, so important. So I really value you and appreciate you coming on to our podcast today.
So
I was so excited. I felt like I was going to talk to a celebrity because I've been following
you
so long.
I'm the opposite of that. Never. Thank you. But no.
So our
not at all.
Appreciates you so much and appreciates your voice. And so
right back at you.
Oh. Thank you. Thank you so much. So thank you everyone for tuning in and giving some space and some conversation for these silent but important conversations. We'll see you next time on Beyond the Loss.
Aditi has personally navigated the complex journey after pregnancy and infant loss. Through both her personal and professional journey, she found that there were more supports needed to holistically serve the loss community in Calgary. To fill this gap, Aditi founded Pregnancy and Infant Loss Support Center. If you would like to find out more about the Pregnancy and Infant Loss Support Center, please go to www.pregnancyinfantlosssupportcenter.com. Thank you for listening. For more episodes, please visit www.getyouvisible.com/podcast.